official K-1 podcast, K-1 Battlecast.
Oh, the Slugfest!
You'll get news, fight reviews, and fighter interviews.
Oh, the best of awesome!
And now, your hosts, Michael Chavero and Jonathan Scheer.
Hello everybody, I'm Michael Chavello. Great to be with you for another episode of K1 Battlecast, the official podcast of K1 Worldwide. I'm joined as always in Tokyo, Japan by my verbal sparring partner, Jonathan Scheer. G'day, Jonathan.
Hey Michael, how's it going?
Jonathan, exciting times, and you know what? I'm going to forego the usual scintillating repartee between us and get stuck straight into the action of this podcast because, my friend, there is lots to talk about, and this week we are going to start with the news.
It's shocking what happened this last week. I'm sure people are kind of reacting to this. It's interesting how things are going to develop, you know, going forward.
It is shocking. It is interesting. Ouyang Feng, the favorite for the K1 World Max Finals on July 7 is out. He is out of the tournament due to a rib injury incurred in training, and in to replace him comes the big Mike Pastania trained Stoyan Koplivlensky. Now, we did see Stoyan in the final 16. He did lose his fight on that occasion. I'd actually tipped Stoyan before the final 16 as one of my favorites to win the whole thing. So seeing him come back in is really interesting. But Jonathan, what information have you found out about this withdrawal by Ouyang Feng?
Well, it appears that Ouyang Feng, the heavily favored current K1 welterweight champion, broke a rib during sparring practice. And as anyone who's ever broken a rib can tell you, it makes everything impossible. I mean, you can't breathe without discomfort, and it would certainly put his preparations for the fight on hold. And with a minimum of 4 weeks to heal for an injury like this, the doctors were adamant that he not participate. So this is essentially a pre-fight doctor stoppage. Now, Ouyang Feng wanted to fight. He begged to be given the chance. But most of the experts would agree that the most he could hope for was a one-off fight. And with the possibility that he'd be going four rounds with an extension thrown in there and three fights in one night, worst case scenario, he'd be fighting 13 rounds because it's like 3+1 and 3+1 and then a possible 3+2 for the final round. There's just no way they were going to take the chance that this injury would hold up for those three separate fights. Now enter Stoyan Koplivlensky. As you know, he trains out of Mike's gym, where Coach Mike fosters some of the best talent in the kickboxing business, like Badr Hari, Melvin Manouf. Stoyan has been training with Mike for the past 8 years after making his way to Holland from Bulgaria when he was only 22. And most people know that Stoyan was training for the fight in the Fighting Network tournament in Galati, Romania on June 13th. Well, unfortunately, once again, a fighter had to withdraw at the last moment because of an injury. And Stoyan, who was already in great shape and in peak condition, was a natural choice. He's a fighter that's already favored by many K1 fans and was expected to win in Romania. And the plan was to have Stoyan come in as a reserve fighter, which is part of what the Fighting Network tournaments are for scouting potential reserve fighters and wild cards. So he really was a natural choice to bring in as a potential reserve fighter anyway. He's in peak condition, and he's a top-level fighter, so it was a natural choice.
So there you have it. Stoyan Koplivlensky comes in to replace Ouyang Feng. We will deep dive into Stoyan's chances next week on the show, but I tell you what, it really does throw a spanner in the works and make things very intriguing, because Koplivlensky will now be the man who takes on Buakaw, who I know is a guy that Stoyan used to idolize when he was young, which already makes it difficult for Stoyan. But let me tell you, folks, no easy pickings here for Buakaw. You know, Ouyang Feng was going to be tough. Ouyang Feng was the undisputed tournament favorite, no doubt about that. And Koplivlensky poses a whole different set of questions that Buakaw, at 42 years old, needs to find the answer to on July 7. We will break it down in more depth next week, though. I'll deep dive into Stoyan Koplivlensky next week. Jonathan, in other news, I got a very interesting message on my Instagram yesterday from Albert Krauss. Albert posted a video of him against Buakaw back in the day. He tagged K1 WGP PR accounts on it, and he also tagged me And he said, maybe we have to do this fight again. So Albert Krauss, knowing that Buakaw is the wild card coming back into K1 for the first time, 20 years since Buakaw last won the K1 Max, is Albert Krauss also looking at returning to the K1 Max? Jonathan, that would be incredible. The first ever K1 Max champion, Albert Krauss.
Well, you know, until just a few years ago, he was still fighting and he didn't slow down. I mean, his technique may not be as fast, he may not be as sharp as he once was, but his heart is still there and he never stopped coming forward. I was so impressed by that. And it just goes to show that I'm sure a lot of these older kind of former K1 champions still very much want to be part of this whole experience. It's hard to let something so beautiful like that die in your heart, I'm sure. So it'd be interesting to see just who joins the fold. I mean, maybe we will see a Petrosian come back. Maybe we will see Andy Sauer come back. Maybe we will see Albert Krauss, you know, make another appearance. Who knows?
And the thing is, Jonathan, that as we see Buakaw and we'll gauge his success or demise on July 7, I am sure we are going to see more old school K1 fighters from both middleweight and heavyweight come back to K1. K1 still has the most prestigious name on the planet. To be a K1 champion, heavyweight Grand Prix champion, you know, middleweight K1 Max champion carries greater prestige with it than any other kickboxing crown on the planet, bar none. We've already spoken about how Giorgio Petrosian was no doubt offered a place in the K1 Max final and maybe a broken nose in his last fight in Milan. A month and a half ago prevented that. So Buakaw got the call up. Now we see Albert Krauss maybe hinting he wants to come back to K1 Max. He wants a showdown with Buakaw. We've seen the heavyweights. You know, we just got from Romania last weekend, Errol Zimmerman returning to K1 action, a guy who was at his peak in K1 probably in 2008. Returning with a big knockout. We're going to see other guys come forward and want to get back in the K1 realm, Jonathan.
Well, there already are, as you say, a few high-powered names being thrown around as possibilities for future K1 fights, and I'm sure we're going to see something next year. I mean, the excitement building around the K1 comeback is palpable.
And you know, Jonathan, time is really the big factor. Age is the big factor. But like we say in the fight game, the last thing to go is power. And there are guys like Errol and guys like Petrosian and guys like Buakaw who can still pack a wallop. And I think we're going to see a few surprise packages come out of the woodwork as well over the next 6 months or so. Guys, we did not expect to make a comeback to K1 will be coming back. You know, Jonathan, we touched on K1 Romania. So very quickly, let's give a quick count of a quick recap of the major results from K1 Romania Fighting Network show in Galați, Romania last weekend.
Well, there's a lot of excitement as the K1 Fighting Network had a tournament in Galați, Romania. It was the first Fighting Network tournament in 16 years. I believe the last one was in 2008 in Prague. And this one went down to Galați, Romania last week, and I'm not going to say without a hitch because there were a couple of hiccups, including a hair-raising one, a last-minute venue change, which I'm sure the promoter was desperately scrambling, but somehow they were able to set up everything on time and get the event started. And it was a great one. I mean, out of 10 fights, I believe that 7 of them did not go the distance. They ended in a KO, so that's pretty incredible. We had, the main card was Errol Zimmerman versus Mihal Karamusketas. We had the one before that was a light heavyweight championship that went down between Leandro Dikmot and Akira Jr. And yeah, it was a great night filled with amazing fights. Let's get into a couple of them. The main card of the evening was between Errol Zimmerman and Mihal Karamusketas, two openweight fighters. And Errol Zimmerman, you know, not in his svelte fighting weight, but still showing that he's got it. He returns to the ring first time in, I believe, almost 2 years. His last fight was in December of 2022. And he is a seasoned warrior, and he comes back to the ring kind of this time for a loved one who's battling on another front with cancer. And so Errol came back to the ring to show support for that relative, I believe. He's still got massive power, even though he doesn't have, he's not in the same condition that he was back in the day, but he owns his range, and Mikhail Karmusketas was powerless to do anything against him. He just basically was a punching bag for Errol for the first 1 minute and 40-something seconds of the fight. Maybe it was like 1:30, and it ended in a TKO as Errol's leg kicks lived up to his nickname. They were bone-crushing. I mean, it sounded like whips-cracking. And still throwing just massive hooks and powerful knees, and Mikhail kind of buckled under that pressure. We also had a fight that was the light heavyweight championship between Dutch fighter Leandro Dikmoot and Akira Jr., who I believe is fighting out of Japan, but it was born in the Philippines. And Dikmoot just came straight out of the gate throwing heavy hands, and they were trading blows early in the first round, and the Japanese fighter got a cut over his left eye at the end of the first round and had lost just a ton of stamina. And so when they went into the second round, even though he was trying to fight back, he just lost all the gas in his tank. And Akira Jr. extends his losing streak to 3 losses. He ended up getting knocked to the canvas twice in the second round. The first time he got up on shaky legs, but Dikmoot came in for the kill. And the second time was the charm, as Akira Jr. was unable to beat the count. And that was pretty much it from the major events on the June 13th show in Galați, Romania.
Yeah, that was a great show over in Romania. Congratulations to them. Big audience. Great broadcast as well. And looking forward to seeing more K1 action coming out of Romania. But for now, that's all of our news this week. And let's get on with the rest of the program.
Well, that's actually not all the news. And we're going to go into a bit of a deep dive today on a tournament that's coming up this week, which I think is quite exciting. Why don't you give us the details on this? I mean, this is a qualifying tournament, and it's the first one in quite a while, isn't it, Michael?
Yeah, Jonathan, the first K1 Grand Prix qualifying event in 14 years when Sarajevo hosts the 8-man tournament on June 29. Promoter Živan Podorák, himself a former K1 fighter, has pieced together a wonderful 7-man lineup with one fighter spot yet to be filled. These 7 men really present a mix of older talents and newer talents and should see the emergence of a very capable champion who will progress one step closer to the K1 World Grand Prix final to be held on December 14 in Tokyo. The Sarajevo event takes place at the Skenderija Arena, which is a staple sporting location in Bosnia-Herzegovina. It's played host to events like the FIBA World Championships and the FIBA European Cup. It's a great venue. 8 men will enter. Only one will survive. And I have to say, Jonathan, it feels good seeing K1 return to its roots, staging qualifying Grand Prix around the world as all roads lead to December 14. Sarajevo kicks off the qualifiers and will serve as the Eastern European qualifying Grand Prix. On July 27, Sicily will host a Grand Prix event, which will serve as the Western European qualifying event. Curitiba, Brazil will host an event in August. That's the South American region's Grand Prix. And I know that K1 is in discussions for a K1 Oceania event with Whispers out of Australia, New Zealand, and Papua New Guinea, though nothing is confirmed. So let's take a closer look at the K1 Grand Prix in Sarajevo and the way that the draw stands. Quarterfinal number one sees Czech veteran Thomas Ron take on Turkey's Kadir Yildirim. Now, originally, this was supposed to be Yildirim against Adnan Redzevic, the Bosnian fighter from Sarajevo. Redzevic is out, so Thomas Ron gets the call up, and this isn't particularly good news for Yildirim. When I call Ron a veteran, I mean veteran and high-quality veteran. Thomas Ron has been around for a long time. He made his pro debut back in 2004. He was a gun. He beat a young Errol Zimmerman. He beat Leonard Sipalek, both of them in his first 5 fights. Ron brings massive experience, both in terms of 8-man tournaments and caliber of opponent. As I said, he's beaten Zimmerman. He has wins over the likes of Choi Banu, Katalin Morashanu, Andrei Stoika, Bryce Gwiden, Anderson Braddock Silva, Peter Mastorovic, Alexei Ignashov, who he beat in 2010 and again in 2012. He's beaten Urhan Deniz, Mighty Mo, who he knocked out in 2015. And he's also got a win over Roman Kriklia, Rade Opacic, And interestingly, this is the interesting one, a win over Claudio Estrate, who is in the same side of the draw as Ron in Sarajevo. It's an illustrious winning list for Thomas Ron. Nobody in Sarajevo on June 29 will match Ron's experience. And like I said earlier, he knows how to win eight-man tournaments. He's won two of them in the past, including winning the 2007 K1 Octagon Grand Prix in Italy. Now, Thomas Ron's recent form has been inconsistent. He's gone 5-5 in his last 10, dating back to February 2021. The big question here is, what version of Ron do we get in Sarajevo? If we get hot Thomas Ron, he could take out this tournament, even at 42 years old. If we get cold Thomas Ron, he is going to get slapped by Yildirim in the quarterfinals. Thomas Ron has never lost to a Turkish opponent. He's beaten three of them in his career. Many things all go well for him. And the fact that he was called into this tournament on 3 weeks' notice, I think, plays out well for Thomas Ron. He won't overthink things. He won't get caught up in his head. He needs to go out there, look to dispatch Yildirim early, and set up a rematch with Claudio Estrate in the semifinals. Now, Kadir Yildirim won't be easy pickings. This Turk is a scary-looking customer. He won the 91-kilo gold medal at the World Championships in Portugal last year. It was an eight-man tournament. Yildirim is a 24-time Turkish national champion. He's a Waco world champion at 90 kilos. He's a sanded champion. He's a true pro. Yildirim is 10 years the younger of Thomas Ron, and he's going to have a 6-centimeter height advantage over the Czech. But even though Yildirim is known as the Turkish Terminator, he doesn't have a knockout on his record. A good record too, 17 wins from 21 fights, but he needs knockouts in this tournament. That's how you win the tournaments. You've got to stop opponents. You don't want to go the full three rounds over three fights and take damage. This is going to be a cracker of a quarterfinal. It may be one of the show-stealing fights on the night in Sarajevo. Quarterfinal number two, it's the Italian sledgehammer Estrate against Nidal Biciri from the Netherlands. Again, this should be a wonderful and violent quarterfinal match. I mean, if you've seen Estrate fight before, you know the big Italian-Romanian just brings the violence every time he's in the ring. Estrate shot to worldwide fame last September when he made it to the final of the K1 30th anniversary openweight Grand Prix tournament, knocking out Mahmoud Sattari, then getting a messy, controversial win over bad boy Sina Karimian before losing to the Chinese Drago Lutsar in the final. Estrate is a monster. His upper body is massive. His hands are cannonballs, and he's not afraid to throw them. This is a guy who looks for the knockout early. The legs are a little of the weak spot of Claudio, and his gas tank could be a concern, but if he hits you clean, you are going to starve to death rolling. Estrate brings 33 knockouts in 60 pro wins. He will have a huge experience advantage over Biciri. But Biciri comes from Hemmer's Gym. That's a name that should inject fear into the heart of anyone who goes against it. Biciri is known as the soldier. He brings a terrific 15-3 record in 18 pro fights. He's a big, brooding Moroccan at 192 centimeters. And he may be coming out of semi-retirement for his crack at K1 glory here. Biciri has won championships in Infusion, at Super Combat. He's fought in Glory. He's fought in Senshi. He's been around. He's a handful to deal with. Estrate needs to pounce on the Moroccan early, land a cannonball to Biciri's jaw. Biciri will try to outpoint Estrate because he's not a knockout artist. And his best chance here will be to hit Estrate's legs, move away, hit the legs, counter, hit the body, wash, rinse, repeat. We move to side B of the draw in Sarajevo, and there's a yet-to-be-named fighter who will take on Montenegro's Miroslav Vujovic. Vujovic is 33 years old. He weighs 113 kilos. He's 197 centimeters, a bloody skyscraper. He's a Balkan karate champion. He's a 5-time Waco kickboxing world champion with a 50% KO ratio. This is a big opportunity for Vujovic, who's been knocking on the door of stardom for some time, but he doesn't know his opponent yet. So as of this recording, Vujovic has no idea how to analyze his quarterfinal match. I do like Vujovic, though. I want to say he can advance in this tournament, but it all depends on who is named as the final fighter in the lineup. But keep an eye on Vujovic. He's big and he can knock you out. Last quarterfinal, it's Ivan Bartek against Danilo Tosic. This is the fight that will bring the house down. This is the one the Bosnians are waiting for. With Redzevic out, Tosic is now the sole Bosnian hope in the tournament, and the entire crowd will turn the arena into a cauldron of support on June 29. Tosic brings in a solid 30-10 record in kickboxing. He's also undefeated 3-0 in pro boxing. His last fight was a boxing contest in March. He decisioned the vastly more experienced Murat Novilic. Tosic brings terrific hands. He sets a high pace. He's calculated. He's not a big knockout guy, but he gets the job done. And with the crowd behind him on June 29, I'm telling you, Danilo Tosic shapes up as a real dark horse for this tournament. He's one of the shorter guys. He's only 186 centimeters. He'll give up 5 centimeters to Bartek, but he has the tools to really make a splash here. As for Ivan Bartek, this guy has to be a pre-tournament favorite. He's from Slovakia. His experience is immense, 45-19-3 record. He's a lean heavyweight, only about 100 kilos. He stands at 190, 35 years old, holds a swag of titles, professional Muay Thai League champion, a WKF European champion, WKU Intercontinental champion. He's also a pro boxer. Really good, solid all-rounder, Ivan Bartek. Great to watch. I do back him as a contender for this tournament. I really do. Now, Bartek does have a very Thai-oriented style. He's got to leave the elbows and the clinching at home, though, for this one. But adjusting to the official K1 rules shouldn't be too much of a problem for Bartek. He can't afford to start slow, though. Nobody can in this tournament format. He's got to try and get Tosic out quickly, and he's got to know that Tosic in front of his home crowd will be rabid. The first minute, guys, of this quarterfinal is going to be insane. It's going to tell us a lot. So that's the K1 GP in Sarajevo. It goes down June 29. We do have television broadcast news coming up, but I do have a confirmation. It will broadcast live on Triller pay-per-view, and there are more broadcast partners being announced shortly. I want to pick a favorite here, Jonathan, but it's hard. You know, my heart goes out for Claudio Estrate, the knowledge he has, his most recent experience in a K1 tournament back in September where he made it to the final. I like the inclusion of Thomas Ron. I think Ron can do damage if he's running hot on June 29. Tosic and Bartek may, though, determine who goes through to the final on the other side of the draw. Anyway you cut it, Jonathan, it is going to be a spectacular K1 Grand Prix tournament in Sarajevo.
No doubt about it, Michael. The event organizers in Sarajevo are working very hard to make sure that this is a spectacular event for all who witness it. We have tickets on sale right now on Triller and on Stream Ticket. We'll put the information in the show notes. In the meantime, let's listen to an interview that we conducted with Thomas Ron. That's right, the Czech fighter who's taking place in the World Grand Prix in Sarajevo. Here's our interview. All right, our first guest of the day is the 2021 Road to One Heavyweight Kickboxing Tournament champion. He was the 2018 WASO World Champion, as well as the 2009 King of the Ring K1 Rules Super Heavyweight World Champion and 2013 King of the Ring K1 Rules Super Heavyweight World Champion. Welcome to K1 Battlecast, Thomas Ron. We've got to know, first off, what your reaction was when you got the call to be part of K1 World Grand Prix 2024 qualifying round in Sarajevo. What were your thoughts?
I was very happy when they called me from Sarajevo that I will be part of this tournament. K1 is my life, and kickboxing is my sport, and I do this sport 25 years, and I'm very happy that can be part of this this tournament in Sarajevo.
Now, you've won numerous 8-man tournaments in the past and are perhaps the most experienced tournament fighter in this qualifying round. Can you tell us about winning the 2004 King of the Ring tournament?
In King of the Ring, it was a very exciting tournament. It was for me first 8-man tournament in my life. I was very young And I was very happy if I won this tournament and I beat Leonard Ciptolek. And it was a big fighter from Thailand this time. And it was a big experience for me.
Back then you faced a young Errol Zimmerman who you beat. What are your memories of fighting against him?
I remember this fight with Errol. It was a fight in 85 kilos. And we were very young fighters. Now we are both different. And we are fighting in heavyweights now category.
You also went on to win the 2007 K1 Italy Octagon Tournament. Can you tell us about that experience?
2007 was my first step to big tournament in heavyweight. I was there like outsider, and I won all three fights and beat much more better fighters than I am. And I, in final fight, I beat Sergey Gur. He was a very good fighter and strong fighter from Belarus, and it was big winning for me.
Now, you've fought, actually, many different legends, one of them being Alexei Ignashov in 2010. Can you tell us about that win?
Alexei Ignashov was for me, a great fighter in K1, and I love his boxing style. He was a very big person for me, and if I win with him, it was great winning for me.
You knocked out the mighty, mighty Mo in 2015. Can you tell us some of your memories from this fight?
I remember this fight with Mighty Mo. It was first or second fight under my new team with Danny DeVries from Colosseum Gym. And he's always very good with strategy for fight. And we make a good game plan. And I won in the second round by KO.
In 2020, you defeated the man with the cannonball hands, another participant in the Sarajevo World Grand Prix qualifying tournament, Claudio Istrate. Can you tell us your thoughts about that win?
With Claudio Istrate, I was fighting on the Young Games tournament in Prague. It was open air. And like with Vitimo, my coach Danny DeVries made very good game plan for this fight. I had good move and make a good knees for in this fight. And I won in second round KO, by knee.
Claudio is actually on the same side of the tournament as you are, and there's a high chance that the two of you will meet again. How do you think a fight against the Grizzly goes?
I don't care with who will be fight in Sarajevo, but if I will fight with Claudio Istrate again, I beat him again. It's no problem for me.
People call you the rattlesnake. Can you tell us why that is?
Because snakes are my big hobbies. And in my terrarium, I have around 40 rattlesnakes and vipers. So this is why I have this nickname.
That's interesting because, you know, actually Semi Schilt also has a bunch of snakes. So that's a similarity. Okay, moving on. Want to know, in your opinion, who do you think is the favorite to win K1 Sarajevo, apart from yourself?
I'm not thinking about this because I believe that I will be winner of this tournament.
I would be interested to know, how hard is it to win an 8-man tournament, and what does it take? What kind of things does it require to win?
For 8-man tournament, you must be very good prepared in condition. Your endurance must be great for 3 fights. You must be strong in the head because you must go 3 times to the ring in 1 night. So for me, it's key, be strong and good game plan for tournament.
Your first fight of the night in the quarterfinal is with Kadir Yildirim of Turkey. What are your thoughts of your opponent?
I know Kadir. I remember his fight with my friend Martin Patsas in Istanbul. But I think that he's a good fighter, but my skills are much more better and I beat him.
In a fight against Yildirim, do you think you win by KO or do you win via decision?
I don't know how, but I win. That's all.
Who do you expect to make it through the final from the opposite side of the draw?
I hope that in the final will be from opposite side Ivan Bartek from Slovakia. I was fighting with him 2 years ago, and I can fight with him again and beat him again.
A victory will set you on the path to take part in the Grand Prix final in December, where you'll be fighting K1 China superstar Liu Tsa. What do you think of him?
I saw only a few fights from him. He's a strong and a very good fighter from China, but I don't know him more.
All right, changing gears just a little bit at the end of the interview, we'd like to ask a few questions about your memories of K1. Did you grow up as a K1 fan?
Yes, I grew up on K1. I watch every tournament, every fight. It was for me, my young years. K1 was best sport for me.
Who was your favorite K1 fighter ever?
I like all fighters from old K1. I was on training camp with many of these guys, with Mirko Filipovic. I trained very often with Remy Bonjasky. But for me, his favorite fighter, Peter Ernst. He was a very great person and great fighter.
Okay, no favorite fighter then. You must have a favorite fight that you've seen, though.
I have seen so many big K1 fights, very good fights. So it's for me very difficult to say just one fight.
Well, maybe that's because you've been in a number of amazing fights yourself. All right, that was Thomas Hran. Thank you so much for joining us today on K1 Battlecast. We look forward to seeing what you can accomplish at the K1 World Grand Prix in Sarajevo. Now, today's strategy might just be to overwhelm you not only with the quantity of K1 content that we have, but also the quality, because we have with us Steve Wright, who is a kickboxing journalist and podcaster, as well as historian in kickboxing. He joins us today to talk about the upcoming July 7th K1 World Max Final Tournament. He talks about what Buakaw has to do to prepare for Stoyan and what Stoyan should do to prepare for a legend. We give you Steve Wright. Steve, thank you so much for joining us on K1 Battlecast today.
Hello, everyone. This is Steven the Warman Wright. I am so grateful to be joining Mike Chiavello, so grateful to be in his podcast. I fell in love with K1 kickboxing, you know, more than 20 years ago now, and here we are. I'm in my 40s now, and some of the athletes are in their 40s now, but it's been really exciting to hear all the news and all the good things that's coming from K1, and of course, to be on the podcast with my guy, Mike Chiavello, who's been on my podcast several times, so super grateful.
Well, we're very happy to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us. First off, gotta know, how excited are you for the return of K1 Max?
So my excitement for the K1 Max, it's, you know, a friend of mine's described me as a kickboxing historian, and I didn't really think about myself that way. I just see myself as just a fan, a guy who fell in love with the sport and stayed with it and kept following it. And in the ups and downs, I still found the time to watch whatever I could, see new young prospects come up. I really fell in love with the sport. So when K1 Max came around, it really was a heavyweight world. And in the heavyweight world of kickboxing, the K1 World Grand Prix was king. Everybody wanted that title. Enter Masato. Masato is young, good-looking, charismatic, and he fights at 70 kgs. You know, we've got Kohei Maki. We've got, you know, guys that were in Japan that were around that weight. It looked like a more great business decision, more so than the natural evolution of what was supposed to happen in kickboxing. So for most people that don't know, Masaki Satake is the reason why there is a K1 heavyweight, you know, tournament in the first place. He had won some titles. I believe he beat Ward. I forget his first name, but he won by KO. And I want to say that was in 1991. And then the idea of, okay, let's see who's the best kickboxer in the world. That's where the King of Kings thing came from. Because for those of you who follow kickboxing and who follow Muay Thai, there's a world champion in every country, on every state. John Wayne Parr said it the best. He said, if you want to be a world champion, go one state over and fight the best guy there. He's probably got a title. So that's what the idea of the K1 came together and accomplished. So when Masato came around and Kohei Aramaki came around, there was this idea of, could we do this with the smaller weight guys? Not only did they do it, but they also switched kind of the look of it. Now, again, Peter Arts and a lot of them, Ernesto Hoos, they were all younger for sure, but the aim of the first K1 Max, you know, the middleweight extreme, the goal of it was to get young stars, not just stars. So they have the first tournament. Albert Krauss wins the first tournament. Masato wins the second tournament in very dramatic fashion with the knockout. And then enter Bukau Polpromukh. And when Bukau won it, I can't stress you enough. This was a Fight Forum world. And I'm a big Fight Forum guy. That's where I came from. We posted and we uploaded and, you know, we actually didn't like YouTube back then. Everybody wanted to have it on, you know, their computer. So they wanted you to put it on Mega Upload or SendSpace or something like that. But that's how we shared videos. And then we did it in the Fight Forums, K1 USA, Kakatugi. And in those forums, I remember when Bukau won it, I joined thousands of other people and pretending like I knew that Bukau was going to win it. Clearly, going into it, Masato and Albert Krauss were still the names. But when Bukau won that first one, it just set the world on fire. I mean, Bukau is just a special, special talent. And that tournament, I really think the beginnings of what made it special happened when Bukau won it. Because it wasn't just that Bukau won the K1 World Grand Prix. It's what he did with it.
Well, it was really an exciting time to be part of fight history, that is for sure. And it created a tremendous amount of interest around the world, not only Japan. You know, what is the legacy of K1 Max among American kickboxing fans?
So as far as American kickboxing fans look at kickboxing, right now I'm getting ready to get my team ready for the TBAs. And TBA is a national Muay Thai tournament that they have in Iowa every year. It is considered the biggest kickboxing Muay Thai opportunity for everybody in the country. There's the place that I'm going to go where I'm going to run into other people who know about K1 Max and K1 USA. Because we don't have a vibrant pro system here, the excitement for K1 coming about, it really is going to lead more people to pay attention to 154 pounds or 70 kgs here in the States. So, you know, of course, we have the IFMA teams, which is the national teams and for Muay Thai. And they have their Worlds tournament every single year. And we're developing talent that's doing better and better. But now that the Max is back, people are starting to dream beyond. And that's the hope. The hope is always that there is a goal for your dream. And when I was, you know, younger, I wanted that white belt. I wanted to win the K1 Heavyweight World Grand Prix. That was my goal. I was a smaller heavyweight at 217, fought as low as 205, but that was the goal. So now that the K1 Max is back, a lot of people in the USA, when I get to this tournament next week, people who know who I am and the sport are always going to come up to me. They're going to ask me, what do I think about the K1 tournament? What do I think about Bukau returning?
Well, good timing that you just mentioned Bukau, because he was named last week as the wild card for the tournament. Can you tell us what your thoughts are about his inclusion?
So when I heard that Bukau was entered as the wild card at 41 years old, you know, I mean, almost 20 years removed from when he won the K1 World Grand Prix the first time. And it is... we are really, really talking about something special. And I mean, it was, you know, I mean, I'm just going back in my memory. It was July 7th, 2004. So yes, 20 years ago is when he won his first K1 World Grand Prix. And the special thing about Bukau is, in my personal opinion, he's the person that made K1 Max a international brand, because it wasn't just that he won the tournament and that he beat Masato in such a one-sided fashion in that first win, the stoppage of Kuriyuraki right before, the split decision over Jiang Wei Par. That decision goes the other way. It changes the history of kickboxing. But so the fact that he gets this victory, it's what he did once he was champion. So after he was champion, you know, and he had the traditional Kozutakata, it was always the fight that they made the guy who won the Max, you know, do afterwards. But then he started to branch out. He fought Kieran Kettle in Thailand. He fought John Charles Kowalski in Hong Kong. He fought Yusuf Akinik, and that was in Italy. And then he had Jamhad, who was calling him out like crazy, and he was a WMC champion. He stopped him at the second. He then fought Marco Piquet in the slam event. Well, Cal became champion, and then he starts fighting all over the world. So now people associate the K-1 champion with this fighter that's going all over the world and going against other people's champions. And that goes such a long way. And clearly, he would still fight in Max on a regular basis. And then when young stars would come up, like a Drago Gago, and you know, when Yoshihiro Sato finally made his way over, he would have success. Like, he would beat these guys. And I think that he is most responsible for spreading the name international of K-1. So when I heard that he, at 41 years old, was returning and he was the wild card, which I did not see coming at all, it really, really excited me, because it took me back to the days where I was on fight forums and I was downloading fights and highlight videos. But Cal really, really is a special talent. And I'm definitely excited to see what he does in this tournament.
That is really interesting to know about how instrumental he was, Buakaw was, at getting the name of K-1 more and more famous. Well, he's 42, and he faces a fighter who is at least, I think, 12, 13 years his younger, in Stoyan Korpovlensky. How do you rate Buakaw's chances against this young up-and-comer in the quarterfinals?
So when you look at the injury replacement, and clearly it's just the nature of the sport, you know, there's just injuries are part of it. Stoyan Korpovlensky getting the opportunity. I've seen Stoyan Korpovlensky fight several times. When I was matchmaker at Glory Kickboxing, I got the opportunity to sit ringside and watch him compete. Decent height for 70 kgs. Good skill, works at Mike's gym, so he's got the, you know, the best of the best. He's got solid kickboxing on a regular basis. This really is his dream. It is his dream to be out here, to be in K-1, to compete in Japan. It means an awful lot to him that he's accomplishing it. The tough part for him, of course, is just winning that step-up fight. If I look at his history, Kato Ono, Tejan Bastadi, Josh Jonsi, he struggles in his step-up opportunities. And Buakaw is the step-up opportunity. So clearly, as he puts his offense together, uses those long limbs, the quick hands, the sneaky head kick, as he puts it all together, there for sure is an opportunity for him to have success. But he's going to have to be on his A game and then some, because Buakaw, not only does he know the game, he's gotten more aggressive with his boxing and looking for stoppages as he got later in life. And I think a lot of it went because when he had those years, when he was struggling with Popramok, you know, the promoter, when the news gets out that he's losing like 85 to 90% of everything that he ever, you know, made was going to Popramok, and then they wouldn't let him be in actual fights. So the best thing that he could do was do exhibitions. So then he would go for KOs because he's trying to do something to cement that he got a win. And that made him much more aggressive with his hands. He's much more capable of stopping you today than he was in his prime. So I think that if Korpovlensky is going to have success, you know, he's got the hard sparring at Mike's gym, so he should be hardened and ready for someone to come after him. But it's going to come down to, can he get his offense off successfully without being overwhelmed by just the presence and the aura and the, you know, work rate and power that comes from Buakaw.
Okay, switching gears now back to the 8-man tournament on July 7th. 8 men enter the ring and only one survives. Can you rank the 8 fighters from favorite to least favorite in your expert opinion?
Okay, so as I look at this tournament field and you were to ask me, like, who do I think is the favorite? Who do I think is the guy that's going to win it all, who's got the best chance to be the champion? Man, it's Buakaw's name definitely makes it a tougher field. I thought that it's a good feel with some, you know, names that people aren't familiar with, but with the opportunity to turn them into stars. Daryl Verdonk was very short notice when he got his opportunity, stoppage victory in round one. Dangi Silva, if you were to ask me, and I'll also answer who do I see as the dark horse. Dangu Silva is got unteachable length. He's very tall for the division, very long. Doesn't, you know, have the best KO pop, but he's got very good, you know, turns his pop, you know, his punches over pretty good. Good length, sneaky knees. I think he's the dark horse if you wanted to choose someone that's like a little bit off the beaten path. Viktor Akhmov got the tricks, you know, he's got to get Romano. Bakbor is a guy who, man, he's tough. He is very, I mean, he's got good, clean kickboxing skill. He is, you know, the Suriname fighter is, he's in a long line of guys from Suriname that are extremely tough, Suriname Dutch fighters. I think that he's got a good run. I guess I'm not as high on Mizinski, but I think that the tournament always opens up opportunities for people to make a name for themselves. So of the eight, I'd say he's kind of more towards the bottom. But Zora Akapan, I think, is tough. I think he has got a good chance. Him or Romano should come out of the lower part of the bracket. Romano's going to be tough to beat. And then I think that clearly Stoyan getting in late notice will be, you know, be tough for him to get Pacquiao. And then Dangu Silva against Darryl Verdonk. Verdonk's going to have to land something significant to put Silva down, because that length and that work rate's going to be really, really tough. So if I were to go favorites, Pacquiao's probably one, Silva two, Verdonk three, Romano four, and then the others, you can put them however you want, as far as what I think they can accomplish. But again, it's the biggest stage, and this is about upsets. It's about stars. When Andy Sauer won his first tournament, even though a lot of people feel Bukau won that fight, Andy Sauer was a reserve. So don't think that because I'm not as high on these names, some of the names, that they can't win this whole thing. Because there's definitely some talent with all these guys. They've all got a decent amount of fights. They've all got their hands raised. They all looked really good in the elimination round. So we shall see what happens moving forward. But the most popular names should still be the favorite.
Now, you just briefly touched on this, but what are your thoughts about the big scorching mosquito, Dangu Silva?
Man, I just think Dangu Silva, when you have unteachable traits physically, you know, whether it be KO power or length, I think it makes people have to be concerned with the talent that you bring to the table. And I just think that that's what's coming to the table right now. A, you know, very tall guy for 54 kgs. As long as, you know, if he gets to the Bukau round, he's just got to be careful of that left hook to the body, because Bukau will eat. It's not just the kick to the arms. It's if he can get you boxing, he will find that opportunity. But if he can get, you know, his volume going, make sure that he boxes a little bit more than he kicks to make sure that he wins over the Japanese judges. They usually favor the strong boxing as opposed to just playing single kicks. I think he's got an opportunity.
Your Buakaw's coach, you have 4 weeks to get him ready for July 7th. What would you do?
So the main thing for getting Buakaw ready, it's I really feel confident that, you know, as I talked about, it's been 20 years. On 7-7, you know, when the K1 Max tournament happens, 20 years since he won his first K1 World Grand Prix. The poetic and the, you know, just the romance of this guy could do it 20 years later is extremely high. So I don't think that there's anything you have to do as far as getting Bukau ready for the tournament. Bukau, very much like a Floyd Mayweather, he didn't have that down period where he was like drinking and womanizing and not. He has always been, I don't want to get into the womanizing thing with Floyd Mayweather, but as far as Bukau goes, he has never let the vices that come with being that level of fighter keep him from being elite all his life. No matter when you've brought him in, you're usually getting the best of Bukau. Now, again, he's not undefeated. He's for sure had some losses over the years. But as far as being ready and staying ready, the thing that's kept him aged the most is you've got footage of him hitting pads every single year of his adult life. Like, he just stayed with it. He didn't leave it. Now, those of you, you know, me and Mike, we know about Thailand and we know about Thai fighters. Normally, a lot of them get into fighting because they want to help their family. In Thailand, it's very important and honorable for the young to contribute to the family. So that's why a lot of Thai fighters get into the game so early. A lot of times, and you know, even in a regional fight, you can make more money in the fight than your parents can make working in a factory for 3 months. So that's where it comes from. So a lot of them get into the sport really early. You know, it's hard, it's demanding. And then when they get into their early 20s, after they see how far they're going to go, because normally if you're going to get to Lumpini or you're going to get to Raja, if you're going to get to the big stadiums, it happens when you are in your mid to late teens, something 16 through 20 is normally when it's going to happen. If you get into your early 20s, it usually means you're probably not getting out of your region. You know, Yotes and Clyde Fairtex, another perfect example. Him and his brother were both fighters. His brother got to the regional scene. Yotes and Clyde was able to be Lumpini champion. Just one person was able to get there, the other person wasn't. So when you look at Bukau coming from that background, as these fighters don't have success, they start to get into coaching. And anytime you go to any gym in Thailand, they're almost always smoking and drinking and doing drugs all the time. And they just sober up just enough to teach you. And then they go right back drinking and smoking as they go, you know, into their late years. They want to be the opposite of the fighter that they were asked to be. But Cal never had that. He never had this period of time where he just left the game and he was smoking and drinking and doing bad stuff the whole time. I mean, he did a seminar. My first champion's Cooley, and he owns a gym in Minnesota where I'm from. And Cooley had Bukau come in and do a seminar. So I just got to see Bukau earlier this year. And even as he's teaching a seminar, I'm thinking, this guy's in great shape. This guy is so athletic and so strong and still, you know, 41 years old. So as far as getting Bukau ready, Bukau is Bukau. He's going to go out there and everybody has to deal with him. He is going to be as tough as it comes to beat when, you know, come July.
Do you rate Bukau as the greatest K1 Max champion ever? And if not him, then who and why?
So whenever you talk about the debate of who is the greatest K1 Max champion of all time, I will say Masato is unfairly not included in the conversation because he was the biggest star and he, I mean, movies and appearances and even doing commentary, he had so many obligations that made it so much tougher for him to go out to Japan and, you know, go outside of Japan and build up a resume there. I think he fought maybe once or twice outside of Japan after, you know, in his career in total. I remember going to Holland and training and stuff like that. But once he became the star, I think it was really, really important that he fought in Japan. So I think that he is hurt by, even though he's got the 2K1 Max championships, I think that he was for sure hurt by the fact that he didn't go on the international scene like a lot of the other guys. Because of that, whenever we think of who is the greatest K1 Max champion of all time, we dismiss Andy Sauer unfairly as well, but he had a great run. He fought, you know, very well. He had a lot of tournament wins. He just didn't age as well as the other two. But it usually comes down to the conversation is Bukau versus Georgia Petrosian. That's what it comes down to. They fought one time. It was a draw. I remember when I watched it originally, strangely enough, the round five of the fight was the thing that got online. But I thought that Bukau had an argument for winning. But when I filmed my kickboxing documentary and I had Georgia Petrosian on there, I remember his coach talking about it. His coach was like, it wasn't a draw for me. He thought he had won. So then history would always wonder. They did meet and it was a draw. And we will never know because they didn't get the opportunity to compete again. But if Bukau, at this stage in his life, can win the K1 Max Grand Prix, getting him his third. He arguably in one of that small tournaments when in 2014, where he had the walkout situation where he was told, you know, because of management, other things, that if he didn't win by KO, that he would be, you know, he was going to lose on the scorecards and that they were going to go to an extra no matter what. So when they went to an extra in that fight, and I believe that was in Thailand when that happened, but when they, you know, when him and Enrico Kiel had that tournament, that wasn't a one-night tournament, I think that you can argue that he won that tournament if you wanted to, just for those that want to go that route, play that game. But overall, when I think about it, I think, okay, Bukow, not just what he won in his tournaments, but what he did on the region. He won the shoot boxing championship as well. With only him and Andy Sauer can say that they're max champions and shoot boxing champions. I look at his overall body of work. If he wins this one, I feel like, even though I already have him as the best kickboxer at 70 kgs of all time, I feel like this cements it. 41 years old, going against these young guys. He goes out there and he wins this whole thing. It puts him in a whole nother stratosphere. Petrosian, still dope, still great, still had a great career. But, you know, you look at the Superbond KO and the fact that he sat out because of it. And Bukow had the, you know, the saddle KO and got right back to work. Like, their responses were different. So a lot of people, because of the difficulty to hit Petrosian and his skill set and his quickness and his vision, they reward him the championship. But people should remember, Petrosian came towards the end of Max. Those guys were already beating each other up for like 7 years before he even got there. So I think that this would cement Bukow as the greatest of all time if he can win this K1 Max tournament.
Well, you spoke about Petrosian, and there was discussion with him, and I'm sure they were trying to recruit him. I mean, I can say behind the scenes, I did hear whispers about that and couldn't talk about it publicly. But speaking of Petrosian, do you think that he would have a better chance of winning the tournament than Bukow?
So there's a whisper that Georgia Petrosian was going to get the opportunity to be the wild card. Skill set wise, he's still him. He's still exceptionally fast, great vision, you know, great counter ability. If he's in this tournament, he's right where Bukow is. You would consider them the favorites, even at their ages. And Bukow's older than he is. So I think that Petrosian, if he got the opportunity, he would have, you know, I think he would have done extremely well in this tournament. This field is a bunch of young guys proving themselves. I do think the length of Silva would have given him a little bit of trouble, especially if he can keep that volume and play a lot of a kick game, because you box with Petrosian, he's able to find his counter really well. But it would have been fun to see it. But again, Petrosian really did come towards the end. You know, he came, Mike Zambides was fighting 10 rounders in Australia. And he was going back and forth between Greece and Australia, just building his brand, fighting elite guys. I think he was 16 years old and he beat a 32-year-old guy. By the time Petrosian had gotten there, Yoshihiro Sato can be thrown in there. He'd never met Masato in the ring. He just got there towards the end. Doesn't mean he's not special. Doesn't mean he's not good. Got a glory championship and a K1 championship. I think he's the only one that could say that. But it's just, it would have been cool to see him in it. But he's tough. Like, that would have been really interesting. And I think that he would have had a really good chance to win the whole tournament. He's still that good at this age.
Well, we spoke about Bukow and what he needs to do to face off against Stoyan. What does Stoyan Koprivlensky do to beat Bukow?
So in conclusion, you know, if I look at Stoyan Koprivlensky, I think, you know, with Ouyang Feng, I actually got to see Ouyang Feng fight live, and he is very skilled. He's got good eyes and he can play power. He's not afraid of your offense. So with Stoyan getting that opportunity, man, it is what the tournament is about. Because once upon a time, Andy Sauer got the opportunity. So when you get this, and if I remember correctly, Alistair Overeem was also a, you know, vote in, you know, kind of reserve that ended up winning it all. So, you know, when you see these opportunities and you see the stage, these athletes really have to make the most of it. And we'll see how he matches up with one of the all-time greats.
Ooh, I made it in time for the end. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks for having me, Mike. Super, super excited for the tournament. Super excited to hear you call it. You know, I'll probably be online doing my thing. going back to the days where we get up in the morning and, you know, for where I was in the central time in America, the K1 events would start around 12 or 1 a.m. and then they'd get done around 7:30 a.m. So things are a little bit different now. Got kids in the house, so I'm not sure if I'll be able to pull that off, but excited to talk about kickboxing with you, my friend, and excited to see the show.
Talk soon.
God bless you. Have a good one. Peace.
Well, that is a wrap on another stacked episode of K1 Battlecast. Jonathan, we've been cramming so much into these last couple of episodes, namely because, yet again, you know, we broke the internet when K1 announced that Buakaw was the wild card. And, mate, over the last week, I've had more time to really digest this, both for myself and seeing the reactions worldwide, and they are good. They are positive. And we knew this reaction would take place if and when Buakaw was announced as a wild card, because the nostalgia of K1, which is a major driving force of K1 now, bringing that old nostalgia of K1 we all grew up with and we all loved back to the fore, that's come back in a big way, mate, because everyone's got Buakaw fever running through their veins.
I mean, you've got Buakaw fever. I've got Buakaw fever. I'm sure everyone listening has it too. He's being talked about everywhere right now. It's on all the forums. And he's a name that everyone recognizes. I mean, Buakaw is arguably one of the world's most famous Muay Thai proponents and one of the greatest K1 fighters of all time. And to be able to watch it back then and to be able to see it now, it's just, it's simply incredible, Michael.
It is incredible, Jonathan. And you know, again, Stoyan Koprolevlensky, we'll deep dive into him next week. I'll try and get a chat with Stoyan or maybe even with his coach, Big Mike Passania, see what they have to say. Meanwhile, folks, stay tuned on our social media sites. Drop us an email. Let us know your fan questions. And Jonathan, that wraps us for another week of K1 Battlecast. Jonathan, I'll see you soon as well. We must go on another food adventure when I hit Tokyo, and we're going to brace ourselves for fun. But before that, we do have K1 Sarajevo, which will be broadcast live and worldwide. It will be on Triller. And there are other broadcast details coming, so make sure you tune in to all the K1 social media pages and the K1 Battlecast pages, and we'll keep you up to date with everything. Jonathan, chat to you next week, my friend.
All right, my friend, we will see you soon. And everyone else, I wish you a wonderful week. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next time.